In Chapter 2, I showed you how to create and tell your brand story. Now, it's time to get to know the main character in your story, your customers, and their journey. It's Chapter 3 of the Marketing Plan Podcast. Let's go.
It's time to transform your business into the brand you've always dreamed it could be. This is the Marketing Plan Podcast. On a straight line between points A and B? No way. Let's jump the tracks and get to point C with Jay Arrett, the Dean of Marketing Know-How.
It is obvious that when a man runs the wrong way, the more active and swift he is, the further he will go astray. And that's the principle behind spinning your wheels, right? We keep chasing and chasing and running faster and trying harder, but success seems just as distant as it always has been. We know we're moving, we are making progress, but it's in the wrong direction. And that wrong direction is transaction hunting. Hi, I'm Jay Arrett, Dean of Marketing Know-How at themarketingspot.com, and in Chapter 3 of the Marketing Plan Podcast, let's look at the road we're traveling and see if maybe we've been missing the signs that tell us to go in a different direction. So in Chapter 2, we looked at the story of your brand. It's a very necessary vehicle of transportation on our journey to point C. But the purpose of that story is to bring people around your brand with commonality, to get them to care more about why they purchase than what they purchase. But what we need to realize is that on our journey to point C, we have another passenger in the vehicle, and that passenger is the customer. So our goal in Chapter 3 here is to consider the main character in our story, the customer. Now, if you look at most business models, the customer is a target, something to be captured. Customers are considered transactions to be acquired, trophies to be won. This is the essence of transaction hunting. But I think that's running the wrong way, to use Sir Francis Bacon's metaphor. As you know by now, the customer is not something to be acquired, but the other party in our brand relationship, our partner. The goal is an emotional bond between your brand and the customer. This transcends product and service. And when you do that, sales happen. While the key to sustainability and growth is sales, those don't come from sales tactics. I believe they arrive through simple relationship principles. Here's a fact you need to accept and embrace. Nobody, and I do mean nobody except maybe your family members, your mom, nobody cares about your business the way you do. And until you prove that you first care about the customer, no one will even care about you at all. It does not matter one bit that you have the greatest product in the world or that you have a lot of passion. So go ahead, tell your story. But if you do not understand the customer won't care, and you'll waste so much time and money. Now, typically, to get to know the customer, a business will acquire some information, right? Let's get some demographics. Let's do a survey. And in our featured conversation in this chapter, we have special guest Adam Ramshaw, and we're going to talk about surveys, customer feedback, and gaining insights from customers. But that information and knowledge are worthless if you don't first build a relationship with the customer. And how do you do that? Well, in this chapter, I'm going to give you 4 customer relationship principles and ask you to embrace them. And then I'm going to give you the key to unlock them. Open up a new note in Evernote and let's get started. The 4 customer relationship principles. Principle 1 is understanding. Stephen Covey, in his landmark book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, said, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood." And in one passage of the book, he said, "Seek first to understand involves a very deep shift in paradigm. We typically seek first to be understood. Most people do not listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. They're either speaking or preparing to speak. They're filtering everything through their own paradigms, reading their autobiography into other people's lives. We often listen to our customers with the intent to sell, not the intent to understand. Have you ever had one of those heartfelt conversations with your spouse or your partner? You know, the one that happens when you can feel the tension building in the relationship. Maybe things aren't going so well and you request, maybe you even demand a conversation to explain yourself, to let her know that if she just understood you, that she would go your way and then everything would be better and both parties would be happier. But something unexpected happens when you actually have that conversation. You say your piece, and then you pause to let her respond and tell you how right you are. But instead, she has something she needs to tell you. And this is a bit surprising, but you listen because you care about her and what she's feeling. And then she reveals that you haven't been that empathetic about her needs. And as she explains why, your mind does a 180, right? And you say to yourself, oh, wait a minute, self. I'm the one who hasn't been seeing everything. And you realize that you've been negligent in providing for her needs. And that's what I believe happens in business. Because if you look at most marketing messages, they're about getting customers to understand me, understand my brand, and why I'm so great for you. But if you spend time with customers seeking first to understand, you can approach them in a way that they understand you care, and then they will be willing to understand you. I'm reminded of the quote I shared with you in chapter 2. People are more likely to buy what you've got when you get who they are, but they won't get who you are until you get them and who they are. And how do you do this? What I've started doing personally is asking entrepreneurs to lunch. That's who I deal with. I deal with people who own their own businesses. So I ask them to lunch, breakfast, maybe coffee, just to talk with them. What happens is they're always suspicious at first, right? Because, hey, I'm a marketer and we know what marketing is about, right? Tricking people. So I reassure them, I promise them, I'm not really trying to sell you anything. I'm just seeking to understand. And so I'll meet with them, and during the course of the conversation, I will start asking them the 4 level 1 branding questions that I shared with you in chapter 2. And guess what? They start to open up. They begin opening up, and I begin to understand them. And then they begin to trust me. And then they begin to ask me for advice and tips. And now they are more likely to buy what I've got. So the question to ask yourself with principle 1 is, how can I better understand my clients? Try this. Make a list of 5 things you would like to understand about your clients or customers, and not how much money do you make, how often do you buy. What are the things you really need to know to understand them? You can use those level 1 branding questions that I gave you in chapter 2. I also like to know what my clients' aspirations are, not just in business, but in life. And I like to know what our emotional connection is between me and my clients. I also like to know, why did they get started doing what they do? Why are they seeking what they're seeking? And so I make me a list of things that I want to know about my clients, and you can do the same thing. And then you take that list of 5 things and you ask a client to have coffee with you. Or ask them to have a Skype chat if you don't deal with people locally and you're a web-only business. Reach out to someone and seek first to understand. And that's relationship principle number 1. Relationship principle number 2 is empathize with action. Empathize means to have the same feelings as another person. So now you understand your client, it's time to understand their feelings. But what do you do with those feelings? You see, you have an additional responsibility because you are the provider of something that they might want and might want to pay for. So you have the unique advantage of being able to look at both sides of the relationship. And really, you know this advice. I've given it before. Don't ask customers what they want because customers don't know what they want. So what do you do if you're not supposed to ask that, right? Well, this is where empathy comes in. It's through empathy that you can know what customers want, even if they don't. It's your responsibility to put that empathy into action, to perceive what the customer might want. And you say, well, that's easier said than done, Jay, sitting there behind your microphone. Yeah, of course it is. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. In fact, I think you're probably already doing it. Maybe not in your business, but in regular life. Let's go back to our relationship scenario after the deep, heavy conversation. After the eye-opener that you received, you begin to think of your partner from their perspective. And so you want to buy them a gift, or you want to do them a favor, or start acting differently. Your mind begins to work proactively. What can I do for them? What can I do for them before they ask me to do something for them? Let me give you an example. One of the ways I like to challenge myself during Christmas or in my personal relationship is that I like to see if I can find the perfect gift for someone. the gift that maybe they wouldn't buy for themselves, but when they open the gift, they just love it and they say, wow, this is awesome. Empathy in action is like that. You're giving your client a gift they may not have thought to buy for themselves, but when they receive it, they absolutely love it. It could be a change in your behavior that maybe the customer didn't directly ask you, but now you understand what they feel and you can direct your behavior accordingly. That's empathy in action. When you feel a connection with someone, when you feel empathy towards someone, then you can project into the future and say, what might they like? What can I do? How can I surprise them pleasantly with something that they might like? That's customer relationship principle number 2. Empathize with action. Principle number 3 is give unconditionally. Isn't that what true, long-lasting relationships are all about? Why doesn't that happen more in business? Don't we often attach strings to what we do for customers? If you buy so much, I'll give you a 10% discount. If you buy from me for the first time, I'll give you this free gift. But what do you give your customers unconditionally, expecting absolutely nothing in return? Back to our romantic relationship scenario. How would it feel if your partner said, if you tell me you love me, I'll give you a dozen roses. Or, if you promise to have sex with me, I'll book a B&B for the weekend. Yeah, that would go over well, right? Again, though, isn't that what we do with customers? Quid pro quo, baby. Conditional love. Do me a favor and I'll do you one. That doesn't mean you have to give your clients everything they want for free. In a relationship, that's how people get used and taken for granted. But you have to ask yourself how you approach the client. Conditionally, is it really give and take? Or is it, I'll take something from you first and then I'll give you something? How can you change that up in your business? Well, in real life, you just do things proactively for your partner. And when they ask you for something, you say, okay, no problem. I have a rule in my business that when anyone asks me for advice, and they often do because they know I'm in marketing, I give it to them. I don't say, listen, I do this for a living. If you want my advice, let's set an appointment and I can give you a proposal. I know people who do that. When I met a local entrepreneur for coffee a couple weeks ago, he began to ask me what he should do with what he perceived to be an awareness problem, and I shot straight with him. He appreciated that, and now he's a potential client. He's looking at me with a different set of eyes. Now, I sell ideas and advice and education, but what if you're a business that sells something more tangible? Let's say you're an import business that sells unique wood furniture sourced from all over the world. Do you just give it to people? Of course not. But maybe you let them see it in their house before the purchase is final. So here's your action step with principle number 3. Inventory your business rules and identify all the conditions you put on customers before they can do business with you. That's right, we place conditions on customers before we allow them to buy from us, right? That sounds crazy when you think about it. And those are things like, for you to do business with me, you must first, what? Give me your email address, pay with cash or check, fill out a credit report. What are the conditional things you put on your customer? The key here is attitude. Are you really in it for the customer, or are you in it for what the customer can give you, namely their money? Whichever it is, the customer senses it. And the cure for that is customer relationship principle number 3, give unconditionally. And that leads us to my 4th principle of customer relationships, make them feel safe. Are clients always suspicious about your motives? Most are. But if you work through the first 3 principles, you've set the stage for the client to feel totally relaxed around you. Many businesses approach the client relationship as one that's adversarial. It's me against them. Like it's a poker game, right? Let's hide our cards. Let's bluff. Let's not give any tells. Why are used car salesmen among the least trusted people in the world? Because you feel like they're always hiding something from you, right? So ask yourself, are you really a used car salesman in disguise selling whatever you're selling? Back to our real-life relationship scenario, you've probably had those relationships where you felt totally safe with your partner, and then there are those when you were always wondering what they were up to when you weren't around. What's the difference? I think it's mainly communication. The person you feel safe with is always forthright with you, always honest, you always know where they stand, you always know where they are. They speak specifically, not vaguely. They're consistent in how they show affection to you. They're steady. It's a feeling of confidence and trustworthiness. Is that how you are with your clients? Do you feel like there are things you need to hide from your clients? Why? How can you be consistent and transparent, never hiding your cards, never bluffing, just being real? Keeping it real. That's a path to safety for the client. And when you do that, the client is no longer suspicious. They feel safe. And people like to hang out where they feel safe. So the four customer relationship principles are, 1, understand. 2, empathize with action. 3, give unconditionally. And 4, make them feel safe. In total, this is called compassion. I think it's essential to having an extraordinary brand. Can you be successful as a ruthless narcissist? Yep, I guess you could, but what fun would that be? On a small to medium-sized business level, compassion is what trumps a slightly superior product or service. If you've read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, you probably remember the details about why certain doctors get sued for medical malpractice and others don't. It's not incompetence that determines whether a doctor gets sued. It's the compassion the doctor showed the patient. Doctors who spent less time with patients, explained less of what's going on, who showed less compassion, were more likely to be sued. Doctors who spent more time communicating with patients, who empathized and understood the patients, the nice doctors, they often don't get sued for medical malpractice because they're nice. It's as simple as that. And the same principle goes for your business. Former Starbucks president Howard Behar used to say, "We're not in the coffee business serving people, we're in the people business serving coffee." Do we forget that a lot? If we do, it's one of the major roadblocks to point C. How could you reframe that quote for your business? "I'm not in the marketing business serving entrepreneurs, I'm in the entrepreneur business serving marketing." That's the right way. Now it's time for our featured guest. If you are using the relationship approach to business, you can now use customer feedback to gain valuable insights that were hidden from you when you were transaction hunting. Our guest today is customer feedback and customer loyalty specialist Adam Ramshaw. His company is Genro. It's based in Sydney, Australia. Let's learn how to get useful feedback from our customers. And now, direct from Sydney, joining us on the Skype line is Adam Ramshaw. He owns Genro, a boutique customer feedback and customer experience consulting company. With more than 15 years working in small business, he knows the challenges it brings. He has runoursurvey.com. That's his answer to some of those challenges, where you can download free small business customer feedback resources to use in your business. And Adam, hey, welcome to the other side of the world and to the Marketing Plan Podcast.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
Yeah, we appreciate you giving us your time here. So we're going to focus our conversation on customer feedback today. And just to start off and give us a foundation, what is the best way to get customer feedback?
Now, the best way is to ask customers. I know that sounds pretty plain, but the best way is just to ask customers in a straightforward fashion. You can use lots of mediums. You can use email or face-to-face or telephone calls. But the real answer is just to go out and ask customers what they think about your business. Try and keep the process as simple and straightforward as possible. Don't introduce a whole bunch of other questions into your survey. I call it Christmas treeing the customer feedback survey. You know, you get marketing coming in and wanting to add another question. And so you get up with this really long questionnaire. So just try and keep it to 1, 2, 5 questions. Just ask customers what they think about your business. Make sure you include some qualitative feedback, so some open text feedback. Make sure you include some of that so that you can understand in detail what it is about your business that customers like or dislike. There's some survey design stuff you can do, but my first suggestion would be just to ask customers what they think. Even if you just have somebody in your business call customers and ask them what they think. That has some issues, especially in small business, because, as I said earlier, customers don't like to give you bad news directly to your face, so email can often work better. But just start doing it. The survey part, you know, don't worry too much about having everything exactly correct, I would urge you just to go out and ask customers what they think. The methodology is less important than just doing it, I think.
Give us a couple, if you would, maybe example questions that would be good questions to ask.
So you can ask them really easy questions. There's a technology or an approach called Net Promoter Score that's gained a lot of traction over the last few years. So their simple question is, on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely would you be to recommend us to a friend or colleague? And that's a really good question to ask as a starting point question. That's a really good way to understand how attached customers are to your organization, how loyal they are. And then just follow it up with a really simple, please tell us why you gave that answer. So you can do a two-question survey if you want. You know, it can be as simple as that. Please tell us why you gave us that answer. And you get quite good feedback from customers from two simple questions. You'll get a good understanding of whether they're loyal, whether they like you or don't like you. And then you get a really good understanding of what about your business is important. You can also add other attribute questions. You can say, how responsive was our business? How good is our account management? There's all sorts of different questions you can ask. But if you just ask that, how likely would you be to recommend us to a friend or colleague, 0 to 10, please tell us why you gave that response, that's a pretty good starting point. I think if a lot of organizations did that, they'd be further ahead from where they are now.
A lot, just answering those two simple questions. Tell me a little bit about who the survey comes from or these questions come from. Is it okay to send them like from my business? Let's say the marketing spot sends out from the marketing spot, hey, we're surveying our customers. Or is it best if this appears to come from like a third party?
It can come from either. And the difference is if there's a high value relationship in play. So if you're a B2B organization and you've got a high value relationship with that customer, sometimes that customer, if they believe that you will know who provided a specific response, then they can be a little bit cagey sometimes in their responses they provide to you, because they don't want to upset the apple cart. They don't want to cause a problem in the relationship because you're an important supplier to them. In that case, using a third party can be a really good way of getting anonymity into that survey response and making the client feel comfortable to be much more open and honest. And that's what you want. You want open and honest feedback. But in general, you can send it directly from the organization. There's no issue with that at all. And in fact, if you send it from the organization and if you respond to the customer when they give you feedback, if you come back to them and say, we really appreciate that, or we see you had a problem here, how can we solve that for you? That's called service recovery. If you do that, the customer will be, surprised that anybody actually read their feedback. Often something can happen. Like, oh, somebody's reading this stuff. I can't believe.
Yeah.
But B, you turn that customer around, and a customer turned around can become a very loyal customer. So it doesn't matter. It could come directly from you or it can come from a third party. The third party is useful when, as I say, there's a high value relationship in play and you think the client might not want to tell you the truth for fear of upsetting an ongoing project or an ongoing delivery that's going on. So that's just something to be aware of.
Well, I guess I'm thinking more of is it okay to ask them questions that may be considered personal or that allow you to get a sense of their lifestyle? Maybe you can give me an example of some questions or some things that are okay to ask the customer that gives you a personal feel for your customer base.
I have really strong feelings on this particular point. I think you can ask customers anything to which you don't have the information. So you can ask in a survey a customer things that help you understand how to serve them more effectively. If you're asking a customer what their banded salary is, unless that's helping you to deliver better to your customer, mm-hmm. that's not customer feedback. And customers see that and they go, well, why are you asking me this? This has nothing to do with the product you're delivering. Why do you care about this? You're just right. trying to improve your marketing to me. And I think customers perceive that and react poorly to that. But I have a really strong feeling. If you know the piece of information, then you should not be asking it. And I'll give you an example. So you should never send a survey out that says, a customer feedback survey that says, Please tell us what you last purchased from us. You know, if you can know that, if you're a website or something like that. Please tell us what you last purchased from us and what the price was and where you purchased it from. It's like, well, if you're a website company or you're a company that should know that information, mm-hmm. you have no right to ask the customer to provide that information that you should already know. So you should be mining your back end and only asking the customer things that you can't know. What they feel, how they feel, what worked, what didn't work in the process. You're most welcome to ask those questions. But every time you ask a customer a question to which they would expect you to know the answer, I had a survey a little while ago. The survey was emailed to me. And the first question in the survey is, what is your email address? It's like, well, you just emailed me the invite. Surely you can do the kind of 10 seconds of technology to yeah. link the two pieces of information. So I kind of resent that when I see that in surveys. But it's very, very common. But you should strive not to do that if you possibly can.
Before we let you go, Adam, one of the big challenges I think for small businesses is in competing with larger businesses is getting good testimonials and getting good reviews. And we've seen the data on getting testimonials and reviews and how they influence other customers to buy. Can you get good testimonials through feedback? And if you can, how do you do that?
Yeah, you can get good testimonials through feedback. And there's really a couple of ways. One of the ways is sometimes just in the commentary, customers will say terrific things about the business. And you want to use that as a piece of commentary that you can use as a testimonial. So if you do that, you really should go back to the customer and say, hey, do you mind if we use this as a testimonial for our business? Most customers will say, yeah, that's fine. If they say no, that's life. The other one is you can be a little bit cheeky, I guess. You can also look at the score they've provided in something like that Net Promoter Score, how likely to be to recommend question. And if they give you a good score, a 9 or a 10, you can go back to them and say, hey, would you mind giving us a testimonial? So you can do that. You can be proactive in that way as well. So you can. That's a little bit cheeky in that you're probably not going to ask the people that give you a low score to give you a testimonial or give you some feedback. That's a little bit cheeky, but I think it's a fair thing to do. So that would be the easiest way to do it, and that's a way that we've seen our clients do it, and certainly that we would suggest you do it. Find the people who give you a high score and go back and ask them specifically for a testimonial, because they're already linked in with you, they're happy with the organization, so they're probably a good place to start.
You know, a lot of us like to get up on our soapbox, Adam, and preach. You know, we know there's one thing that we would like our clients and our customers to do. So if you could shake a business by the shoulders and get up on your soapbox and say, do this one thing, what do you think that would be?
In the customer feedback space, it would be do something. Do something with the feedback. Getting the feedback is not the hard part. Doing something with the feedback is the hard part. And so the thing that I would love organizations to do much more of is just to take action on the feedback they get. It doesn't have to be PhD level statistical analysis on their feedback that's going to take 6 years. Get a piece of feedback, see something in their business, make a change. If you do that, the customers will love you for A, making a change, and B, they'll love you for using the feedback that they've provided. So everything else will go better. It'll be a virtual circle. So just take action on the feedback. That's the one thing I would ask organizations to do.
Adam, as we wrap up here, where can people find out more about you and the services you offer?
So you can come to runoursurvey.com. It's specifically a site for small businesses, and it helps them with information around customer feedback and implementing customer feedback systems. So we have some great free resources on Run Our Survey, some great free resources there, plus some other stuff that allows you to get up and running on the right customer survey for your business and your industry in 5 minutes. So that would be a great place to come along and have a look for some more information as well.
And I'll post a link to that in the show notes of the podcast. Adam, hey, thanks for joining us here on the Marketing Plan Podcast.
Great. Thanks, Jay. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. How do they say it in Australia? Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. That's a good start. That sounds pretty good, actually. Well done.
I'll post links to Adam's company and runoursurvey.com in the show notes of the podcast, which you can find at marketingplanpodcast.com/chapter3. And now we are three chapters into the podcast and you're saying, hey, Jay, where's the marketing plan? It's called the Marketing Plan Podcast, man. Give me a plan. And my answer is I am. I'm just giving you a plan that's different from what you're used to getting. Remember, it's not about the tools and the tactics. If it were, then everyone who uses the tools and the tactics would be successful. So have a little patience. We're building this brick by brick, not all at once. Because the other way is the direct line between points A and B. And you've been running hard in that direction, haven't you? But I believe that's running astray. I'm Jay Arrett, Dean of Marketing Know-How at themarketingspot.com, and together, let's get to point C.
All the stuff we just talked about, it's on the web at marketingplanpodcast.com.